To Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I am Tay, Eric Taylor, glad to be with you on a fantastic Sports Friday. You want to join us, man? Come on and get on the ride. 718-664-9098. Please email us, and we will read some today at raeandtaytoday@gmail.com. Always check out our website. It's interactive. We've got mock drafts for the NFL, the NBA, NBA and baseball standings, photos, polls. That's rayandtaytoday.com. Also, tweet at us at rayandtaytoday. Like us on Facebook. Just get interactive, man. We're all about the technology. Ray, man, I got to tell you, I'm glad to be with you, man. Been a little under the weather the last couple of days, but the show must go on, and Tay is ready to play and talk some sports.
Well, I love it. Well, let's talk about what we've got on tap for the show. So like we always do, we'll talk about some breaking news in the world of sports. We'll talk a little golf. We got a 14-year-old playing in the Masters and possibly making the cut. How crazy. We've got some NFL action. We've got some moves. We've got some college football players in the news. So we'll go through that. We'll also take a trip around Major League Baseball. We finished our third series. We're heading into the end of the second week of the season. So we had a little brawl, some fisticuffs last night. Unfortunately, somebody broke his collarbone. We'll talk about that, Zach Greinke. Then NBA, we are right at the end of the season. We got playoffs coming up. We'll talk about Knicks, Lakers, OKC. We'll talk about league leaders. And then we'll end the show with our segment, You're Not Ready, where Ray and Tay will bring you some underrated players, teams, or people that simply are not ready. And you'll interpret not ready different ways depending on what Ray and Tay bring you, but I think you'll get a kick out of that episode, out of that segment. So without further ado, let's get into some of this breaking news.
Well, listen, man, I'll let you set it off first. Tell me what's going on with the kid from China that is not legal age to drive.
He's not even in high school.
No, this is incredible.
Oh, my God. This kid is unbelievable. So he's a kid from China, and I don't know if you followed, but he had shot a 73 yesterday, and then he shot a 75 today. But that 75 included one stroke for slow play. So he really, on 17, so he was warned a couple times, and then he got docked a stroke. So he really should have shot a 74, which definitely would have made the cut. Now he's on the border, but it looks like he might make the cut. So could you imagine a 14-year-old kid making the cut at a major, at Augusta National, making the cut?
And not just any major, the Masters. I think it's beautiful. And then you got all these 50-somethings. Fred Couples and all these old guys who are up, you know, near the lead. Tigers playing good. I mean, why don't you break down the league leaders for everybody, man?
Yes, so the leaderboard, right, is 5 under is the lead right now. So that, they project the cut to be either 4 or 5 under, but it looks like it might be 4 under. Freddie Couples, Mark Leishman, and Tiger Woods. Now, Leishman's on 17, is on 18 right now, and Tiger's about to go on 14, and they're all at 5 under. And then you've got the next group with Angel Cabrera, Jim Furyk, Brant Snedeker, John Senden, and Jason Day are all at -4. So you've got 7 folks within, you know, one stroke of each other, and it looks like it's going to be a really tight leaderboard going into Saturday, and I hope this kid from China makes it. I mean, why not? How exciting is that?
I'm rooting for him, man.
And he was so poised. You know, Tom Rinaldi interviewed him, and he said, you know, what do you think about this penalty? Because, you know, that might cost him the cut. And so he goes out and says, you know, it's what the refs decided. I respect their decision. It's a 14-year-old. This is not a 25-year-old. It's a 14-year-old kid saying, you know, I respect the judgment. I'll just have to take it, and hopefully it won't affect me going forward. So kudos to him. And
Tiger's
back.
And Tiger looks good. I saw some beautiful shots from couples, and, you know, got a root for him, Jason Day. You know, it's I'm pulling for Bubba, though. I definitely want Tiger to win. That's my guy. But when you see guys like couples and BJ Singh playing pretty well, it's pretty exciting, you know, especially when the older guys are, you know, the 50-something crew is hanging in there looking good, you know.
Yeah, I hope that Freddie Couples, his body doesn't fall apart, right? He's 53, and he's tied with Tiger and Leishman for the – you know, for the lead, hopefully going into Saturday. So, you know what? All these old guys, I like them. I like to see the old guys. I like to see the guys that, you know, used to give it a run in their 30s and 40s, extending out later. You know, we had Tom Watson a few years ago at the British. We had a bunch of older golfers. And, you know, why not? Why not? They've got all the experience in the world, so it's just a matter of can they put it together for 4 days. You know, it's tough. It's tough to play 72, you know.
It can be grueling. And, you know, it's so funny because they were joking when they were doing the broadcast that Jim Nance was joking with Nick Faldo, like, Nick, man, you should jump back in. Nick's like, nah, I've been away too long, man. But I used to love Nick Faldo. He had a great game, good putter. And, you know, I'm just very excited. And I think, you know, obviously Couples plays well, knows the course well, but, you know, you got to believe, man, if Tiger's this close to the top, watch out, because he could be getting his fifth green jacket. Wow.
Well,
that would be
heavy.
They
have him as a prohibitive favorite. I mean, I think he was like 11-2 to win the whole thing. So folks in Vegas certainly are putting their money on Tiger. And look, he's going to probably have a share of the lead going into Saturday. So at the halfway point, after 36 holes, he's looking like he'll be at about 5 under. He still has 4 holes to play. But Tiger looks good. It's hard to bet against him.
Yeah, that's good. Well, let's spin around the NFL a little bit, man. I mean, the Bengals, they signed or re-signed their running back, Bernard Scott. You got Jeff Garcia, who's been working out with Sanchez and with our guy from the Jamarcus Russell. But he basically came straight out and said, look, they need to cut Tebow. It's just too much of a distraction for Mark. So I guess it's nice to see somebody in his corner and stand up for Mark Sanchez. You know, I think that's a pretty cool thing. And this
He's
one
right.
hurts me a little
bit. Right.
No. Listen, we all – but look, we said this last year, right? When we started the show around September 4th, we had questions about, you know, about this and about Tebow and just what it would do. So, you know, we'll see what happens. The Bengals are making a lot of moves because they're also getting – they had a nice little visit with James Harrison, and it looks like him or Carlos Dansby could be close to signing. We'll see what happens maybe on Monday with the Bengals. But this one bothers me. Monday is when it has to be matched. The Pittsburgh Steelers this weekend are contemplating, do they get a third-round pick or do they match the offer from Emmanuel Sanders? They're, you know, right now they're number 2 wide receiver. Now, if they sort of, you know, say, hey, let it go, and then they can draft somebody else, they'll have enough money to sign Ahmad Bradshaw. So in the third round, should I draft a receiver as a Steeler fan? All you Steeler fans out there, you know, do we sign Bradshaw and then draft the receiver in the third round? Might have to say goodbye to Emmanuel Sanders. That could be a rough one.
Emmanuel Sanders.
I like him too, Ray, but
Wallace is gone. So Antonio Brown is going to be double and triple teamed. You really don't have
any but we got Plax back in the fold, a healthy Kotchery, and maybe a second or third round pick we use as to get a stud receiver, maybe even a first round. What if we go get, you know, Cordero Patterson or, you know, I don't know.
No.
You know,
whenever
maybe we get the
have
Woods.
A Ben Roethlisberger in the prime of his career, you
don't
want to
take away his toys, right?
Tools that can let him. I mean, because, you know, Ben, as many hits as he takes, he's a big boy, but how much longer can he play at an elite level? 3, 4, 5 years? You can't, in these years that he's still elite, you got to give him a chance to win. You can't take two of his three receivers away from him.
Totally agree. I totally agree. Hey, listen, it's a hard one, very, very hard one. Vince Young has been working out and really has impressed the Oakland Raiders. So, you know, we wish him well on his journey to come back. And it does look like that our boy Jay-Z has, you know, gotten Victor Cruz. He's selling his shares at the Brooklyn Nets, so he's going to start to get NBA players. And Roc Nation Sports is on the move. And, you know, they're saying that Jay-Z, you know, is expected, you know, to keep Victor Cruz with the Giants. And he was working out this weekend down at Duke, right, this week down at Duke with Eli Manning. So Victor Cruz wants to stay in New York. So I got to believe it will be for less than $10 million a year, you know.
It's
it will be more in that 8-9 range.
Pretty funny how Duke has never been – anything in football, you know. I guess Steve Spurrier.
But it's the coach, right?
Yeah. Right, but Steve Spurrier, you know, was at Duke before he went to Florida. And then suddenly now Duke, you know, Peyton Manning puts the football program, or at least the facilities, back on the map. And now Eli's there and you know, potentially Victor Cruz. And everybody's like, Duke football. You would think Duke football is, you know, a major
program.
Well,
you know, Rutcliffe worked with both of them. And I didn't
right.
realize this. Rutcliffe worked with Eli and with Peyton in different stages of their career. So that's
so funny that he's at Duke, though. It's the doormat of the ACC. For so many years in football. And there's some other things going on, obviously. Darrell Revis looks like he's running a little bit, so they're hoping that he'll report at some point, to the Jets. Who knows when he'll be back on the field. Eddie Lacy had his pro day, and they said
yeah.
he was a little bit slow. I mean, mixed reviews
on him.
He ran well. Everybody's trying to compare him to Trent Richardson. I think he's a different back than Trent Richardson.
Definitely.
But we'll see. I like him, actually. I like his prospects. But, you know, sticking with the SEC, Tyrann Mathieu, you know, this guy comes out and says, again, who is coaching these guys? He comes out and says, you know, I failed so many drug tests, I don't even remember. That's not really what you want to be saying. I mean, look, I'm all about the truth. But
yeah.
That's not a good look. That's not really how you want NFL scouts.
I wish the kid well, and I think he's just trying to be honest. And his, you know, all these kids need the media training, and, you know, he'll learn not to be that honest. But I do believe he's headed in the right direction, and I guess that's what's really positive about it. And I bet he'll surprise people. I think he'll be a third-round pick. You know, some people say maybe later. I think he'll be late second, early third-round pick because I think on the field he plays ball. He's a ball hawk, and you what he does, you don't teach. That's what I believe. I think he's that instinctual on the football field. But you know what's so
yeah.
funny? When you talk about these draft picks and money and stuff, did you hear about Eric Wright, the veteran with the Bucks? He took a $6.25 million pay cut to stay with the Buccaneers. Ouch. Maybe that's to free up money for the trade for Darrell Revis for the 13th pick and more from the Jets to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Let's look out for that one. I sense it coming.
And what about the Ravens signing McClain and then Huff and Dumervil? And, you know, for a team that 2 weeks ago looked like they might not even go .500, they're replenishing on the defensive side. So good for them. You know, let's see if McClain can resurrect his career, right? He was a high draft pick coming out of Alabama and then going to the Raiders has a little bit of a disappointment. So let's see if he can go to Baltimore and really pick up his game and reach that potential that everybody's looking at coming out as, you know, one of All-America linebacker. I think it was the number 10 pick overall to the Raiders.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I like the moves of late and, you know, I don't know. I remember some harsh tweets. There might be an apology letter coming up soon from Ray. We'll have to see.
Well, let's see the season first. You know, I still think when you lose the guys that they lost to Burke and Ray Lewis to retirement, and then you lose Anquan Boldin, the heart and soul of your offense, despite your $20 million quarterback. And Webb is still coming back off the knee injury. You needed to make some moves and get some, you know, and get some players. And we'll see. these guys can fill in some of the holes.
Hey, before we get into baseball and all that stuff, just real quick, just some quick little notes. This one's kind of surprising. The San Antonio Spurs have waived Steven Jackson, the veteran, who I think is someone that could help them, especially defensively in the playoffs.
I didn't get that.
I didn't get that at all. Kind of bizarre. And then I felt bad for Kurt Thomas, right? He comes and plays that game with the fractured foot, and then they waived him. But the Knicks are looking like they're going to sign Solomon Jones for the remainder of the season. So they got Solomon Jones, and there was a rumor that they were also signing Singleton, and I don't know if that's
Singleton
the case.
Was a done deal. Yeah, I heard Singleton was a done
deal.
Where are the
roster
spots?
Well, you know what it is.
The Knicks sign too.
Singleton made it 15 again when they waived Kurt Thomas, but I guess because Amari might not make it back, that's why they're looking to sign Solomon Jones, or they'll wind up waiving James White. We'll see what happens, how that works out. But I think they're just saying Solomon Jones for the rest of the season, so he might not be on the playoff roster.
Got it.
So it might just be to, like, have some people to play for the next four games, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Which would be kind of interesting, but I feel bad for Kurt Thomas, and that very well might be the end of a very solid career. And, you know, for Knicks fans, Kurt Thomas has got a special place, definitely in our heart, you know.
People forget that Kurt Thomas led the nation in scoring and rebounding, playing for Billy Tubbs at TCU. This is a guy that you look at him at the end of his career, and he's kind of, you know, laboring a little bit. And even at the prime of his career, he wasn't the most athletic dude, but he contributed. He was a tough guy. He contributed. He could hit some jumpers. He could grab you some rebounds. He, you know, for a big man that didn't look all that great, he got up and down the court okay. So Kurt
very solid.
Solid NBA player.
Bang, get you some post points and rebound, definitely. So let me ask you this. As we sort of slide on in over to MLB, are you ready for Atlanta Braves, Oakland A's World Series?
That would be fantastic.
That's what I want to know. The two hottest teams in baseball, baby. The Oakland A's at 8-2 and the Atlanta Braves at 8-1. Are you ready? Are you ready for a Braves A's World Series?
That would be great. You know, the A's are a team that is usually on a shoestring budget, and Billy Beane playing that money ball game. And they had a fantastic second half of the season last year. Everybody was ready to fire Bob Melvin. And like Bob Brenly said, you know, that's his boy. He said, what a job he did turning it around. And they always seem to do that. They always pull a cat out of a hat. And the Braves, you know, they've got the Upton brothers. Maybe an Upton cousin might show up. You know, they might just have the Upton family reunion down there in Atlanta.
And Justin is hot, right? That's a great outfield. Upton and Hayward, the law firm? I love it, man.
Yeah,
the
maybe
new
Ben
Atlanta
Jarvis
hot
Green
law
Ellis,
firm.
Maybe Ben Jarvis Green Ellis could play some baseball, and then they could have a real, you know, competing.
Let him
law
DH
firm
in American League parks, right?
Yeah, but yes. So Oakland is surprising at 8-2. Atlanta, you knew was good. You thought that, you know. Again, I think the Washington Nationals, who are 7-2, could win 100 games. But the Atlanta Braves, I picked them as the wild card. So they're not so surprising. Oakland, though, maybe they're just picking up where they left off last year because.
Well, yeah,
you know,
I don't think they're surprising. Not with that solid pitching, though, Ray. I don't think they're surprising.
They
I picked them as my wild card, and I think that they're. They manufacture runs, and with that ballpark, that's a pitcher's ballpark. So, I mean, you know, kudos to them and Bob Melvin. Like Bob Brenly said, and you know, they've got a great manager and they've got a good little system. And right now, they're road warriors, 6-0 on the road. So you gotta like that, man.
Well, in that division, you gotta ask yourself, what's up with the Los Angeles Angels, who are 2-7. Now, again, you don't really get worried, at least 30, 40 games, but 2-7 for a team
and
that's
your pitcher's
got
hurt,
that
Weaver,
payroll, but that hitting, you know, they should at least be putting up some runs. I mean, at least get into some slugfests. And they're not even scoring runs. Their runs scored, they only scored in 9 games, you know, they've only scored 35 runs. That's the lowest in their division. Just to put it in perspective, Oakland scored in 10 games, so one more game, Oakland scored 66 runs.
Wow. Yeah, you know, you hate to see that. I mean, I'd definitely say at least the Angels, they started off playing some tough teams, right? Started off against the Reds. Cincinnati Reds are 5-4, and, you know, they had a tough battle with them, and then the Rangers, and, you know, so they haven't had an easy schedule to start off the season. But like you said, it's early. I think this is my question. When are we going to stop making excuses for hockey and baseball, right, and letting these guys fight? You know, I mean, I don't want to pull a race card, but to me, with baseball and hockey, it's like, oh, we'll just let the white guys slug it out, right? But then in football and basketball, black guys, if they start to fight for 1 second, and, oh, my God, the sport's in shambles and society's a wreck. I mean, there's a little bit of a double standard. I mean,
so,
what do you think? Because I'm getting tired of it.
I don't know if I'm pulling the race card on this one, but I will say that it's so endemic. It's just part of the sport, for better or for worse, and I think for worse. But in hockey, there's this notion that you self-police because people are walking around with deadly weapons, with sticks. Well, baseball's a deadly weapon too, the bat. But hockey as well, if it wasn't self-policing, there'd be more fighting. So I think back to myself, and I'm thinking to myself, really?
That's what you have referees for.
Exactly.
And there's called rules and whistles.
You have referees for. But no, in hockey, it's the chippiness and all of that is all settled by fighting. You know, each team has a goon or two that
total cop out
will take on the other team or will protect.
It's a total cop out. And that's why hockey gets no love in America. People don't want to, the majority of people don't want to see it and won't watch the sport. And it's why Olympic hockey is so much better, because they don't have the fighting. You know, and, you know, the two of us grew up loving hockey, but we don't follow it the way we used to. This is the first time we're talking about it on our show, you know, since the season really started.
Well,
I think it's disappointing. I'm just saying in general, though, just to give you an example, right? We're not hockey lovers, but surely I respect the game, and I would respect it more if they didn't have the fighting, and I think baseball's got to stop it too. To come away with excuses like, oh, it's the fabric of the game. No, it's not. Because you don't want to teach that to kids. So it's hypocritical to say, like, what? Oh, you could teach fighting in baseball and hockey because it's part of the game. But if you do it in football or basketball, you know, you're a thug or a criminal or an animal, or, you know, you know, steroids or all that rage.
All right. You're worked up. Tay is worked up. But let me ask you specifically about this, about what happened last night. So you saw what happened, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Greinke, who hits a lot of people, and Carlos Quinton, who is the new Dusty Baker, who was it that was kept getting hit all the time? The manager for the Colorado Rockies. What was his name? The big guy who played for, for the Yankees.
Oh, I know. I know who you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so Carlos Quinton leads the league in getting hit. He got hit some like 42 times over the last few years. And so Carlos Quinton tends to dip in, and Greinke hits a fair amount of people. So,
but he's hit him a
twice.
Bunch of times, too.
Right. He hit him twice. Last time was several years ago. Last time was like 09 or something. So he hit him twice. He hit him the third time. So Greinke hits him. Now, he hits him on a 3-2 pitch in a one-run game in the, you know, sixth or seventh inning. So time and score don't really dictate that he's trying to hit him, right? It just doesn't make any
sense.
Totally agree. That's what Mattingly said after the game. So,
yeah.
But he hits him. Okay. Then Quinton takes a step or two. And then Greinke says something to him. So Greinke isn't 100% without fault. Greinke escalated the situation.
Yes,
and then
did.
Quinton rushes at him. And then when, you know, Quinton's who's got him by 40 pounds,
yeah.
You know, he was a all-state linebacker. And so he hits him, and he breaks his collarbone. I hope, thankfully, it's not his pitching show. It's his left collarbone. But still, you can't pitch with a broken collarbone. But
nope, he'll be out for who knows how long.
Yeah, a month, 2 months. What does baseball do about this?
Well,
some
say suspend him. Usually what's been happening is anywhere from 3 to 7 games for incidents like this. But some people are saying, and of course the Dodgers are saying, he shouldn't play again until Ranky is, you know, able to come back and pitch. I don't know about that, right? Because
yeah, the injury's unfortunate. I don't think
it's unfortunate. You can't predict an
injury on him.
But this is my issue, right? These guys have got to stop it, because one of these days, I don't care what the sport is. And I'm not serious, like, really about the whole race car thing. I am a little bit, but the point is, it's not about race, because in all sports, we've got all ethnicities. But there is a stigma, and I just think you got to stop giving a pass to hockey and baseball, and every sport needs to stop. We've evolved as a society, and, you know, we use sports as so many things as our fabric, for poetry, for philosophy, for teaching, for, you know, teaching health and education and humanity to children. Stop the fighting, because someone is going to get seriously hurt, Ray, and then you're going to have lawsuits.
So what do you
all
do? So let's say Greinke, let's say you deem that Greinke hit him on purpose, because you can stop the fighting, but you can't stop the pitchers from pitching, right? And so let's say a pitcher hits a batter on purpose. What happens? So stop the game right where Greinke hits Quinton. What happens?
Looking at the situation, what I would have done is the umpire and the first baseman umpire could have came in. I would have jumped in front of Carlos or whatever, and I would have signaled to his manager, and I would have walked him to first base. Greinke, I would have not have thrown him out because of the situation. If I felt that he was throwing at him, he's out of the game immediately. Period.
The problem is, I think that the penalties have to be more punitive. If you're going to stop this from happening, you can't stop. Only the catcher is probably close enough and big enough and strong enough to stop the hitter from rushing the pitcher. And the catcher, you know, just wasn't quick enough to put his arms around Carlos Quinton to stop him. So really, you have to stop Carlos Quinton from going out there by penalties, right? If you have,
no, you're right. If he rushes that he's done for 21 games, he's not going to rush.
That, and then, you know, but then you would say, okay, well, then the pitchers have free reign to hit people, so then you got to do the same thing for pitchers. You got to say there's got to be a committee that looks at these games and looks at these hit batsmen, and then the same thing for pitchers, right?
You lose a month of the season. How about
purpose,
that?
What's that? How many?
A month, 4 weeks.
A month, wow.
That will shut it down. 3 weeks to a month will shut it down. They'll stop being goons and clowns. Because let me tell you something. It's a lot deadlier in hockey and baseball than it would ever be in basketball. You know what I mean? You're talking about a bat, a ball, and a stick.
Football
is not as bad, right? Because they can't hurt each other when they're trying to fight, really.
Yeah, well, Rudy Tomjanovich and that incident in basketball was one of those tipping points where, you know, he got his jaw broken, and basketball said, well, David Stern, one of the things, to his credit, he got rid of drugs and he got rid of fighting in the NBA. So, you know, they did a good job. Look, the problem is that, again, with baseball and hockey, I just don't think anything's going to change. I don't think it's so accepted as part of the game.
Shame on them. We've had so many things in this society accepted, and I just think it needs to stop. Because what's going to happen is there's always a tipping point. You know it. I know it. History has shown us that. And the tipping point is going to be extremely violent or extremely deadly, and it's going to change everything. And it's going to be a big, big mistake. But anyway, before we leave baseball, one thing I would like to say is that I'm excited to see teams like, Pittsburgh goes on the Diamondbacks and they get to, you see the Cubs, or, you know, they're not doing great, but, you know, early on, you're seeing teams that, you know, might not have a big shot, but they're playing scrappy ball. They're trying hard. How about the Mets? Their explosive, lineup. Harvey pitching, Pettit's 2-0, Mets are 5-4. You know, so I think early on in baseball, I think it is kind of exciting to see some teams really look like, you know what, we want to be around and we, you know, we're here for the season. You know,
and then
I think
the
that's
Miami
encouraged.
Marlins at 1-8 who have no chance.
What do you
it's
think?
Terrible.
Do you think they might set a record for losses this year?
Well, Houston.
Not far-fetched, right?
No, I know, but I don't know if they'll set a record. But Houston, because there are other bad teams in the league, so they could get
right.
some gimmies here and there. But Houston lost 100 for a couple of straight years, and the Miami Marlins are well on their way to lose 100 games also. What a ridiculous franchise that is. You know, in 07 they win, they beat the Indians, and then they totally break down that team, and then they build it up again. They sell the team. They build it up again. In 03, they beat the Yankees, and then they win their second World Series, and then they break the team down again. And then they change the ownership, and Huizenga gets out of the business. And then, you know, now they sign Reyes, and then they do this big salary dump, and they really have, you know, a two or three good players, and the rest are just really average or below average players. And, you know, they build a new stadium. And then
they signed Reyes and a bunch of cats. I mean,
but then they put a horrible
everybody thought they had a super team.
There. I mean, what are they doing to the fan base in Florida? And if there's any place that's rabid about baseball, it's Florida, right? Like Arizona, that's where they have spring training. That's where everybody, you know, it's a baseball, it's a baseball state. And what a horrible product they have down there in Miami. You know, they need to get some new ownership.
They better be careful because we also know. We also know they better be careful because down there with the beautiful weather and the beaches and the beautiful women, there's a lot of other things to do. And you've seen it in Tampa, and you could definitely see it in Miami. You know, people will stop coming. The Miami Marlins will, you know, with a beautiful stadium will be beautiful and empty with the quickness.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. You know, and that's a problem with places like L.A. and Miami. If you're not good and you're not generating buzz, people just won't come. You know, in Tampa, there's the excuse that the Trop is just a horrible facility. But you don't have that excuse anymore in Miami. I mean, it's a beautiful park that they just built. It's brand new. So, yeah, they got to get it together down there. You know, and again, the ownership, I come back to ownership. They're not serious. They made that quick run for Reyes, and maybe they overpaid. And then so they turn around, and then they dump all those salaries and that experiment that they had with, Reyes and at short and then moving over, your boy who went to Toronto and that big salary dump in Toronto. If I'm a fan down there, I'm thinking to myself, what's going on? What's happening down there? You're getting rid of players, you know, sending players to the Dodgers, sending players to Toronto, and really, what message are you sending to the fans? Come out.
You're sending to them. Go see LeBron James and the Miami Heat repeat.
Well, because he's a Knicks
and
fan,
that,
so he's not even
and
supporting
that,
the Marlins.
With that, let's take a quick break and let's get into the NBA. Ray and Tay.
We're back to talk National Basketball Association, better known as the NBA. Woo! Most teams have 4 or 5 games left in their season, and then we've got to talk some playoffs. Playoffs?
Well, the streak is over, and I'm okay with it. I just don't like the way the Knicks, after 13 in a row, you know, they're banged up. The Bulls are banged up, but they just can't beat the Bulls for nothing. And Nate Robinson, 35 points. He played one heck of a game. You know, when Melo gives you another, 36 and 19, you're like, wow. You know, he still has the scoring lead. But I tell you, the Bulls, I don't know what Derrick Rose or his brother or his BJ Armstrong agent or whatever they're thinking, but if they, you know, could get Noah back and healthy with his feet and really had, you know, I think it's too late for Rose to come back, but if he came back earlier and was healthy, I think this Bulls team, they're having one of those type of seasons where they could really push the Heat because of that size and the improvement offensively of Noah and the way Boozer and Dang are playing this year. And I just think it's a wasted season. I feel sorry for them, but they're going to give the Brooklyn Nets in that 4-5 matchup all they can handle, because it looks like they'll hold off the Hawks and probably, you know,
but
stay.
But they'll give anybody
matchup.
A matchup. That's the problem if you're an Eastern Conference team. You really don't want – I mean, obviously you don't want to play the Heat because the Heat are the best team, you know, probably in the league. But you don't
want to play – Yeah, poor Milwaukee.
You don't want to play the Chicago Bulls, even without Derrick Rose, even without Noah. Tom Thibodeau's defense and his defensive principles – and the team that they've assembled for him is so in sync in terms of how they play together as a team defensively, and the playoffs play right into their hands, right? Because you slow it down, it's fewer possessions, defensive, you know, and so they only have to score 80, 85 points to win a playoff game, and they can hold you to, you know, 75, 80 points. They could beat anybody. So, and the problem is there's nobody like them in the league. So it's not like you could say, oh, you know, we play these teams, these three, four, five teams throughout the season, so we get that sneak preview of what the Bulls have for us. The Bulls are so unique in the way that they play and their lineup. And then, you know, if you get Nate Robinson contributing, you know, in addition to if Noah comes back, so you got Noah, Boozer, Dang, Heinrich. You got
Heinrich,
some,
yeah.
You've got some players on that team, and Jimmy Butler. You know, you don't want to face the Bulls is the bottom line. So I feel sorry for my Nets, who I thought, you know, would do some big things, but it's a bad matchup.
Yeah, and I think the Nets, you know, through the season, I don't know the season series, but they've definitely struggled with Chicago as well. I think, you know, we're going to get a classic matchup in the 2-7 with the Knicks and Celtics. You know, KG's back. You can never count Boston out. They play hard no matter what. And I just think that you're going to, you know, I think this year, though, the Knicks have got something for Boston. But I definitely think Boston is not going to go out without a fight. They might win a game or two. But I like how the Knicks are coming along, man. I really think, you know, Kenyon Martin, it's, you know, just got to put some ice and stay off the ankle for a couple of days, and Chandler will come back, and, you know, we'll see what happens with the first round with Amari, and I think that, you know, Shumpert's starting to look a little bit better, and the Knicks are ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, I think the Knicks are looking as good as they can look this deep into the season. Obviously, they started off on fire, and then they came back to reality a little bit. The defense slipped a little bit. The threes weren't going down. Melo got hurt. But the Knicks are as fine-tuned as they can be. Now, obviously, you'd love to have Amari back, and you'd love to have that extra guy in the rotation. But the blessing was that J.R. Smith has really stepped up as a number two scorer. And, again, he can shoot you out of games, but he's doing that less and less this year. He's playing under control. He's playing D. He's rebounding. And obviously, he's just a matchup nightmare when his shots go down. So if the Knicks hit threes, they're another team that, like the Chicago Bulls, but totally different, right? Because they're offense and they have a go-to guy. So it's a totally different formula from the Bulls. But the Knicks are a hard matchup, too, when those threes are going down. Now, will they go down in the playoffs? Will they be able to find open threes like that and rely on open threes? You know me, I'm always scared of teams that rely on threes to succeed. But the Knicks are a tough matchup as well. And I think that the Knicks have so much frustration and angst from the Celtics for the last, you know, 10 years that I think that the Knicks will take a lot of joy in meeting and beating the Celtics in the first round.
Yeah. Well, look, at 51-27, this has been, you know, a heck of a season. And the one thing I like about the Knicks, Felton is a penetrating point guard. I think, you know, through this streak and all the injuries, JR has learned to, you know, score all over the court and even draw fouls and get to the free throw line more. Melo's scoring all over the place. He's not just chucking up threes. So I think that they'll be able to you know, score without just the 3 points from Novak and Kidd and going three-point crazy. I think you're right. They get stuck sometimes with the habit of it, but I don't think they need it to win games. You know, so it's going to be exciting. I mean, obviously, you know, the East and the West, you got all these crazy games and matchups. You know, the Lakers, man, hey, 42-37, and they're a game up on Utah, which, you know, they need to remain at least, you know, a little bit up because they lose the tiebreaker. Lakers against OKC right now for the first round. That's going to be kind of fun, Ray. I don't know. What are you thinking? I mean, the Spurs are half a game back, and they lose the tiebreaker. So
I think in some ways it's a blessing in disguise. We'll talk about this later, but the Spurs getting Houston, I think the Spurs getting the Lakers would be tough. I think anybody getting the Lakers is tough. I'd rather, as much as the Lakers are sort of in trouble through, you know, with a season where they only will win, you know, maybe 44 games, I'd rather see Houston, Golden State, then see the Lakers, just because you never know. I never want to play Kobe, and certainly Dwight Howard can cause a lot of problems as well. So I just think that OKC team, I think the Lakers will win one or two, actually, but I just think that the Oklahoma City team is so confident, especially because I come back to what happened last year with the Spurs. Being down two, and being down in that third game, they just said, look, we're younger, we're more athletic, we can dig deeper down in our bench, our starters can go 40 minutes if they need to, and we're just here to play for 48 minutes, and Russell Westbrook is a matchup nightmare. So if you're going to put Kobe on him, he's going to tire Kobe out. Now, he's going to shoot a lot of shots, but he'll take a lot of minutes on defense from Kobe. Now, Kobe's played 48 minutes, something like the last three out of the last four games or something like that. So he's tired coming into the playoffs. You know, so I think Oklahoma is just – they just have too much. They have too much firepower. They have too much youth. They're going to go up and down the court, and Ibaka and Perkins will, you know, at least keep Dwight Howard busy and Powell busy so that their wing players will just have to do their thing. And so, but I do think the Lakers could win a couple. I think they could lose a series 4-2, but yeah, OKC's got too much,
in
the tank.
I think if the way that they can win is if Howard and Gasol dominate. If they can dominate, then they can pull off the shocker and upset even OKC. But I want to look at Golden State and Denver, because with the Gallinari injury, I really think that Golden State and Mark Jackson, who could easily be up there for Coach of the Year, even though there's a 10-game difference between the teams, right? I could see where Golden State, because they like to sort of, you know, play, you know, free-flowing and run with that Denver team, you know, with the Golden State shooters and now Bogut starting to, you know, play a little bit better and more minutes with David Lee, and you get Klay Thompson and your boy Curry going and Jared Jack.
That's shooting backcourt in the league.
Exactly, and Jared Jack is probably third in the voting for Sixth Man of the Year behind J.R. and Crawford. Jared Jack's had an awesome season. I could see Golden State winning maybe in seven games or six games against the Denver Nuggets. So, you know, we easily have some classic first-round series this year where I think some of them will be complete duds, and then the others could be like, you know, to the end, you know, like every game to the last second. And Memphis and the Clippers, you know, they're battling each other for home court between 4 and 5. So that's going to be fascinating as well, because right now, even though the Clippers, you know, they get the 4 because of the division win for the Pacific Division, they're actually a game back in terms of who gets home court in that series. So
right.
That's going to be – that could be the difference, you know. I don't know if Clippers will go to Memphis
series.
And win.
That should be a second-round series. You know, unfortunately for them, here's the thing. The 3-6, Denver and Golden State, they were made for each other. And they're both lucky, because I think that the other
both
team –
both of them would lose to the Clippers and Memphis, right?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. The other team is the only team, maybe even of the 8, that they could win against in this – or the other 6, I guess, in the playoffs, because their matchups don't bode well for playoff basketball. half court, man-to-man defense, rebounding, you know, efficient scoring, you know, games in the 80s. These are all things that neither Golden State nor Denver really do well at. So both of them, one of these teams is going to be very lucky because they're going to the second round when if they played anybody else in the conference, they'd probably lose. So the beneficiary of that is, you know, obviously the team that wins, and the loser of that is L.A. Clippers and Memphis, because that team, the winner is going to obviously, you know, play probably OKC in the first round, but in the second round. But the loser, to me, is a top, you know, is a top team, and they're going to go out in the first round and be looked at like, oh, it's a first round loss. But you know what? Memphis or the Clippers could easily be in the conference finals if it weren't for the fact that they're playing each other 4 or 5, and then they have to battle, you know, OKC in the next round. So the Western Conference playoffs look to be great.
Definitely.
Especially that second
round.
Well,
look, as the season is running down, let's look at, you know, who will probably be some of the, or, you know, the winners of the different, you know, league leaders and stat categories. Obviously, we know the great battle between Melo and Durant in scoring. Melo's at 28.7 and Durant's at 28.3. Then you have Kobe, LeBron, and James Harden at, you know, 27.3, 26.9, and then 25.9. So, I mean, basically, it might come down to the 17th, next Wednesday, when both OKC and the Knicks are playing, but, you know, you got to believe it's going
to
be
at
exciting.
At 4 tenths of a point with 4 games to go, you know,
it could
it's
switch.
Carmelo's to lose. It could switch, but it's Carmelo's
yeah.
to lose. I mean, at this point, you know, I haven't done the math, but I would
that
think
stretch.
That
yeah.
Durant
that
has
stretch.
To outscore him by, you know, a good, you know, 7-8 points in the last few games to make up 4 tenths of a point, you know, 78 games into the season. So it's not like that's that easy to do. And, you know, the other thing is Durant has got 3 in a row. So to me, Durant probably isn't that hungry for it, and they may not work super hard to get it for him, whereas Carmelo, the Knicks might work super hard to get him that scoring title. And it might be one of those things where he just goes out and on his last game – he may even sit the very last game, but let's say the second to the last game.
Or he pulls a David Robinson.
Yeah, well, David Robinson needed to beat Shaq,
right,
for 72. But I think that Carmelo, they might push him and say, you know, go get us 40 or 50, and we'll have you sit the last game of the season and just, you know, put the bar up so high that Durant has to, you know, do a 60 in his last game, you know.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see. But it looks
no,
like
definitely.
I think Carmelo's going to win that.
Well, then, and then you got rebounding, right? So everybody that's talked bad about Dwight Howard, guess what? He's leading the NBA in rebounding again at 12.4. Then you've
shoulder.
Got the young guy, right, from Orlando, Nikolai Vucevic. Then you've got our man, Omer Asik, David Lee, and Zach Randolph.
Two Knicks.
You know, yeah, they're all at 11 a game, right? Two former Knicks, and Randolph and Zeke, I mean, and David Lee. But you got to like that for Asik and Vucevic. But Dwight Howard, man, 12.4, he's the man, you know?
That's, you know, that, and kudos
and that's
to him.
And injured
right?
back, right?
Kudos that's to him. Good. He's still leading the league in rebounds by half a rebound over Vucevic. And he's doing it basically with a surgically repaired back and one shoulder. And at times he has trouble lifting the ball over his head. So, yeah,
and oh, by the way, he's fifth in blocks. So blocks, you got Ibaka first, our boy Larry Sanders, who we did a You're Not Ready segment for with him, Tim Duncan, the veteran, third, Hibbert, the Hoya at the Pacers, fourth, and Dwight Howard, fifth. But Ibaka, Ray, 3.09 blocks a game. That's a lot. You know, and Sanders is only, you know, he's at second with 2.83. So kudos to Ibaka, who clearly, you know, will win, you know, the block shot title. That's pretty cool. You know, I think Ibaka is definitely one of the most improved players this season, as he also increased his scoring.
Yeah,
and
he was always good defensively, and he could always block
no,
shots,
definitely.
But now he's really
definitely.
Becoming a complete player, a complete big man.
Yeah, and then over an assist, Rondo played enough games, so he's still number one, which is pretty amazing at 11.1. Then you have CP3, my man Grievous Vasquez at number three. Can
now,
I get a yo?
How surprising is that?
That Terps.
Grievous Vasquez.
Come on, give me yo, give
starting.
Me yo Terps. Give me yo Terps.
Yo Terps.
Yo Terps. Right.
So it's
our
surprising
man,
to me that
yeah.
Grievous Vasquez is not only starting in the NBA, but he's third in the NBA in assists. I never
9.1. Kudos to him. But you know what this tells boys and girls, though, and everybody? Work ethic. Work hard. Because he was, what, a second-round pick? People thought he might not even, you know, do that much. And look at his career. Look what he's doing. Drew Holiday is fourth. He's had a pretty good season for such a bad Philadelphia team with no Bynum and just a mess at 8.3. And then rounding out the top five, Darren Williams, who's had a much better second half as he's gotten healthier, at 7.7 assists. And it's good to see D. Williams. You know, it took him a while. It took him most of the season to get his first dunk. You know, he just wasn't healthy. He's lost the weight. The ankle's getting better. And I think he's sort of peaking at the perfect time, at least for, you know, Brooklyn Nets fans, to see D. Will start to look a little bit more like himself. Has got to be, you know, pretty awesome and encouraging, you know. And then you got steals. CP3 leading the way, 2.45 a game. He's got that pretty much locked up. Then you got again, Ricky Rubio.
Rubio off the ACL. So that's even more
incredible.
Impressive that a kid, that, you know, a young guy, but a guy coming off a blown ACL next year is second in the league in steals.
Very impressed. Conley's third, Monte Ellis, fourth, and number five, Kemba Walker from UConn, baby, with the Charlotte Hornets at 2 a game. So, I mean, you know, like you said, Rubio, I mean, that's encouraging, right? Minnesota fans, I mean, God bless you, right? All these injuries, Roy still wants to play the last 2-3 games of the season. You know, all their players have been hurt. Kevin Love, everybody, I mean, you know, Karolanko, Budinger, anybody that could play for them this season played and got hurt. So at 2.38, you know, steals a game, you got to like that. And Conley's kind of stepped up his game. I think you like his improvement, right? And he's starting to hit the jumpers.
Yeah, he's solid. The question is, can you build a team that can get out of the first and then second and then possibly go to a conference championship with Mike Conley? That's what, you know, I always had an issue with, is that he was young and Rudy Gay, and again, they traded Rudy Gay and they needed some cap relief. And so they've got really a team that's got a young, you know, backcourt and then a, you know, big sort of bruising frontcourt. And let's say they get by the Clippers. I don't know. That's a coin toss. But then, you know, they come up against Oklahoma City. So I like Mike Conley. I don't love him. I don't think that he's a guy that can take you to an NBA Finals, especially in this league where the point guards are just so talented.
No, you're totally right. So last category before we do our segment, you're not ready, field goal percentage. Tyson Chandler was up in this for a while, but, you know, now it's DeAndre Jordan, number one. It's 64% a game. It's all alley-oops, lob city dunks. Dwight Howard, that man is there again. For such an off-season, he's at 57, number two. Ibaka's three. Give credit to him. JaVale McGee for Denver, 57 is four. And then at 56-7, number five, J.J. Hickson, who probably might not, you know, be a free agent, probably will not stay in Portland. But I do like J.J. Hickson's game. He's just got to be motivated, you know? So.
Yeah, his ups and downs are crazy. But when he's on, he can contribute. He's a very, very solid 6'9", you know, gives you a lot of oomph in the front court.
So are you ready for our segment, You're Not Ready?
I'm not ready, but let's do it anyway. We're running out of time, so we better do it.
All right, man. Well, listen, why don't you go first and tell us who is your pick?
All right. So on this segment, as we've done before, a guy like Larry Sanders is usually a guy that goes below the radar screen. So the premise is usually you're not ready because you don't know about this guy, or you haven't given this guy enough credit, or you've dissed this guy in the long, you know, or overlooked him. Because if you diss him, you're in a different segment. That's called I'm
right.
Sorry. So you know, we throw an
if you're wrong, right?
If you're straight wrong, yeah. So I'm taking a different spin on you're not ready. And this goes out to the preseason player of the year in college basketball. Preseason All-America, preseason player of the year on the preseason number one team. And he had a good season, and the team had a good season, but I contend that he's not ready. He is personally not ready to go and make an impact in the NBA. Now, he can be a role player in the NBA. He'll probably be a top 10 draft pick in the NBA. But I think that the kid has physical tools, and if he works on some things, that he can be better, and he's better off staying in college and getting his game together. So the guy I'm talking about is Cody Zeller. So, again, preseason player of the year, and he had himself a good year. 16.5 points a game, 8 rebounds. He had 45 blocks, so about a block and a half a game. And he shot 56% from the field. And for his career, 2 years at Indiana, shot close to 60% from the field. So all of that is great, and his stats are fine. And, you know, nothing stands out in his statistics as being lacking. But if you look at his game, he doesn't dominate. He doesn't dominate at the college level. And so a guy that doesn't dominate at the college level, I mean, even a guy like Tyler Hansbrough, who, you know, turns out to be a solid, you know, role player for Indiana, score, you know,
dominated
the ACC. He's an all-time leading scorer. And so, you know, you could argue that Cody Zeller has better tools and maybe is more athletic and is more gifted than Tyler Hansbrough, but he doesn't dominate. And my problem is if he doesn't dominate in college and he wants to play a power forward position, which is a lot of physical, you know, play, it's not, you know, he's not a finesse two guard that just
I don't think he's brother better than his brother at Cleveland, Tyler Zeller from the Tar Heels.
Tyler Zeller
has a lot of
ball skills, and he's projected as a center, and I don't know where they're going to put him as a four or a five, Cody, but to me, he's not ready. He needs to stay another year in college and start to dominate. Again, Tim Duncan. Look at Tim Duncan. Had a beautiful NBA career. 4 years in college, could have come out after his sophomore and junior, didn't. Stayed in college. So anyway, that's my guy. Cody Zeller's not ready to come into the NBA and dominate like his talent potentially could allow him.
I feel you on that. And you know I say, okay, he didn't dominate against Syracuse. And Victor Oladipo, his own teammate, outshined him, so he definitely isn't ready. For me, I'm not going with a player. And I'm going with the pros, and I'm projecting forward to the playoffs. I'm going with a team that we just mentioned a bunch of their players because they're up in league leaders. The seventh seed in the Western Conference, 44 victories, led by James Harden. You're not ready for the Houston Rockets, and the Spurs are not ready for the Houston Rockets. 25.9 a game for my man Harden. You're not ready for Amaya Oshik, 11.7 a game rebounds. Jeremy Lin, 6.1 assists, and averaging almost, you know, a couple of steals a game. You got 1.8 steals for Harden, and I think 1.5 steals for Lin. So I can tell you right now, the way that this team is playing, and you got the 1.1 block shots from Oshik, the Houston Rockets, with Ginobili not playing, Parker from 70 to 80%, they just waived Steven Jackson, and you got Chandler Parsons balling out, scoring 15 a game. You have six guys on this team. One, two, three, four, five, six guys averaging double figures a game. So you're not just getting it from one guy. You're getting it from a little bit of everybody. I think the Houston Rockets will shock the world, whether it's DeFino or Lin, Oshik, Parsons. The Houston Rockets will upset the San Antonio Spurs in the first down. That's it. Everybody, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. And you're not ready for my Houston Rockets.
I'm not ready for the weekend, but it's upon us.
Some great NBA games. Enjoy it. We're going to miss the college hoops. Enjoy baseball. And thanks for listening. Ray and Tay today.
Friends.
Peace.